have a gavel, but I am going to, welcome everyone to the meeting of the Ashland Housing and Human Services Commission. Welcome to all our guests, and we're going to have presentations from the great organizations that made applications for us today. The first thing on our agenda is going to be the approval of the minutes, and then we're going to have an opportunity for a public forum, and hopefully we can keep it short for that part. So have the councilors had a chance to read the minutes? The commissioners had a chance to read the minutes? Ms. Cole. Yes, right. Keep somebody here. So Heidi, we usually have some recommendation. None? Okay.
Okay, then I'm going to be approved.
They're approved, but now it's like... Does anyone else have any suggestions about the minutes? A motion to approve the minutes as presented?
I second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving the minutes from the last meeting, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The minutes are approved. So right on time, we're starting the public forum. So that's an opportunity if anyone wants to address the commission on any housing issues. Step right up. Okay.
That would be us.
That would be us. So we don't limit it very much, but we do have a really crowded session
yeah,
today.
Yeah, we can
so
be really brief.
You can tell this is an impressive list.
I came before about an issue that...
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And we just wanted to, you know, kind of get some ideas.
Could you introduce yourselves also?
Sorry.
Introduce yourselves.
I'm Stephanie.
My rogue
reason.
Yes. Right.
And we live in the same complex, and we have the same concern about the affordable housing being used properly.
And now the newest info is that the unit has been rented at market price. So our understanding is that puts us in violation of the planning agreement for our entire complex. And we're wondering how to go about protecting our assets from protecting the affordable housing.
Right. We'll ask our staff person, where is that adjustment coming along in terms of the city council's look at it and the planning commission?
Still in legal. The legal department has to draft new documents, and the legal department has to make a determination about what our remedy would be in this instance, because this affordable unit was created, or these two affordable units were created through a planning action when the rental units condominiumized, and so indeed restricted the two of the units in that process. And the remedy that's identified in the resale restriction covenant is to revoke that condominium conversion approval, which of course, you know, what is it, like 10 years, 11 years later, is not really feasible at this point. And so it will be up to legal to determine what that remedy would be. Like, what would it be, a fine? Would it be, I don't know. It would be up to legal about how we could address that within the terms of the contract that we have already.
Is there also a possible change in policy in relation to how that goes forward at all?
Yes.
And that's been at the Planning Commission?
No.
No, it's...
We have not embarked on that part of the journey yet.
Okay.
Yet.
But it's coming.
So would your recommendation be to connect with the legal department to see
yes.
what kind of...
We have spoken, and we are working on that actively.
Okay. So I think we would like a report back about how that particularly, not just, I mean, affects your situation, but it also has an ongoing effect if there's a policy question around that, and which we would weigh in on. But I think our best suggestion is to follow Linda's advice and connect in with the legal people and then report back to us so we know when
you
do have a place.
And I will follow up with the city attorney, and I'll bring
okay.
that information back.
But you want them in the loop on this, right?
Well, and I will let them know what the legal says.
And I just want to say, just as a neighbor and a homeowner, it's just distressing for me. I'm a nurse, to see an affordable housing unit, which, you know, we do not have enough affordable housing in this area,
correct.
And rent it out at market rates. It's just really distressing to me.
Right.
And the renter who's in there is very nice. He's actually another nurse. But it just, it does not feel right, and I think the rest of the people in our condominium feel the same, that it should not be, affordable housing should be kept for affordable housing.
Thank you.
So, thank you all for your time.
Yes. Thank,
thank
you.
You
thank you so much.
So we're going to go to the public, social service grant application presentations. As we go into this, we're going to have a discussion of conflict of interest, because while we're just going to be hearing presentations, commissioners have a chance to ask questions, and so we need to have the discussion about conflict of interest before those questions are open. So as we've talked about several times in conflict of interest, being a member of a board, according to our legal advice, is not necessarily a legal conflict of interest, but is one that might compromise your objectiveness in terms of being part of the discussion and the decision-making. And so what we'd like to ask anyone around here is, have they have a connection to one of the organizations that is board member or formal or financial, particularly, that you would need to declare as a conflict of interest? And then the policy would be, if you were a board member, you could say, I can make an objective decision on that, and then you could still participate in that if everyone agrees with that. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just opening it up. Yes.
So, Jackie Bachman, I'm on the ORA board, and I believe I can make objective decisions today in the 19 grants that we're looking at.
Okay, so let's go around. Is there any others that have? Okay, here we go. All right.
Well, I would just like to say, since we're in such a small community, and I've participated heavily in the Ashland Winter Shelters for the last decade, that I have contact with many of the people in this room, and I feel that I'm not conflicted about, I have no financial interest in any of the groups, but people will know me and see me interacting with different groups here.
Right. For all of you out there, a couple of years ago, we got into a little bit of a corny space with conflict of interest, and so we're really being very careful about it.
I, Gina Duquesne, I am on the board of the ARC, and I used to be, I heard you say former, and so I used to be on the board of the Children's Advocacy Center, Jackson County, and I will not make any bias opinions.
I didn't hear well.
You will be objective.
I will be objective.
Okay. So everybody's had their chance. Oh, Linda. All right, go ahead.
I am on the La Clinica board, but I will not be weighing in, so I do not have to be objective, though I would be if I needed to.
Well, I volunteer around, but I stay away from the boards. It's really good. But let me just say, for those who have indicated that, is there any other, from my point, I believe each one of those people can make and will make objective decisions, but is there any objection to any of those people have it stated their potential conflict being part of the discussion and the deliberation? So I think we're on to the next stage. Okay. So we have a list, and we're going to ask people to do 5 minutes.
Up to 5 minutes.
And we, if you could do, if you, many of you have been here before and know, but we kind of know your organizations well. So reiterating your history and the wonderfulness, but talking specifically about the way that is strategic in Ashland and how that's helping us and what the actual funds go for to Ashland really helps us a lot. So here's the list.
So we'll go in alphabetical order, and many of you have the list in front of you. And I don't know if everyone is here, but if you just want to call out organization, then
I think we'll just go down the list. And so if you can do the whole thing in five, that's what we're shooting for. If the more you leave for questions, it's probably that's up to you, but you've got 5 minutes to go ahead and proceed to give the presentation that you want to give. So if that's the case, we'll start off with Addiction Recovery Center and an introduction.
Yes. I'm Diana Drews, and I am the Communications and Development Director for the Addiction Recovery Center. Since you do know about our organization, we have submitted a grant to you for the purchase, actually for our program, which is the Early Engagement and Mobile Response Unit, specifically the Mobile Response Unit. We're seeking funds to purchase a vehicle so that we can do this early response. In regards to Ashland actually happens to be is the fourth largest population that we serve in Jackson County. Last year we served 85 individuals here, 19 of them we worked with the police department in doing jail diversion and picking up individuals and taking them to detox to get treatment. This year we're already at 91. We expect to be at a much higher level than that by the end of our fiscal year, and we project these numbers to go up even more, unfortunately, because of the opioid crisis that this country is experiencing. The mobile response unit, our vision for it and what we're working towards is that it'll be a 24/7 response unit. When we are called out, we can be called out to emergency rooms, hospitals, the jails. We can go under bridges, wherever we have to go. To get individuals, to get them into treatment, and many times save their lives. So this is what we are asking for, is that we need to purchase vehicles so that our certified recovery mentors, who are the individuals that go out and do this, can get around. We just do not have the transportation that we need. In addition, these the CRMs, the Certified Recovery Mentors, also respond to people in the community that don't have transportation, and trying to rely on the type of transportation that you know these counties or our cities have is very unreliable for them being able to get to treatment. Or to getting to appointments, and that's what these CRMs are for. They are that linkage. They are the navigator that helps individuals that need to get to treatment, need to get to their appointments, and follow through towards recovery.
Okay. Questions?
Yes.
Go ahead.
This is a new program, and this year is the first we've heard of it.
Yes.
My understanding is you haven't done this before. Have you been doing it?
Yes, we have been doing it for 18 months, but at a very limited capacity because we just don't have, like I said, we don't have the vehicles. Getting our certified recovery mentors has been difficult in getting all of them. Right now we have 9 on staff. We're looking to add 5 more. We just got funding to bring more on staff, but it's the vehicles that we need.
And how many people, how many people go out in a vehicle on the staff?
Usually it depends on the circumstance and what we're going into, but there's usually 2 vehicles. You know, we're very careful to make sure that individuals have the type of coverage that they need.
And do most of the referrals come from police? How do you get them?
They come from the police department, but they also come from emergency rooms. They can come from any place, truly. People just call us and say, you know what, we've got an issue here. I've seen somebody under the bypass, you know, and it looks really bad. We immediately send somebody out.
What detox sobering unit would you transport to?
The one that is in Medford. Okay, that's the only detox unit from here to Eugene right now, so it is the unit that we would take them to.
And are there other services that you would be duplicating? Is there anyone else that does this?
The OnTrack does things similar, but they do not have a detox unit. We also have the residential and the transitional housing. We have the medical assisted treatment. We have walk-in clinics. They have some things that are that they do. But the thing is that even with all of us in this county working at full capacity, we're not even scratching the need. You know how much the need is. So, is there duplication of services? Absolutely not, because we can't even handle the capacity that's out there, which is that.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you. That was timely and good. I have a question, not for you, but who's keeping track of the time?
I am not.
I can.
I have two volunteers over here. So if someone has a way to keep track of the kind of 5-minute-y thing, that would be helpful. But you did it well done.
Do you want a noise to go off when the 5 minutes happens?
Yeah, there's chairs. People can sit if they would like to sit, or stand if they'd like to sit.
Okay, so am I done?
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your consideration. And it's such a pleasure to be here with all these other very esteemed organizations.
It is. And I got to tell you, thank you all. You know, we should be giving away $10 million.
I know.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
CASA.
Hi, I'm Winona Spivak. I'm the Deputy Director for CASA Jackson County. Thank you for your time and consideration tonight. So our application is for capacity building. We have, in Jackson County, CASA serves the entirety of Jackson County, including Ashland, of course. And last year, we had 212 CASA volunteers who served 768 children in our county. And we still have over 200 on our wait list. In regards to children in Ashland, it's a small number of children simply because we don't have community foster homes aren't really something that occurs in Ashland. Most of our foster homes are outside of Ashland. We do have 45 CASA volunteers here from Ashland that are serving those children. And we do have additional children from the Ashland area that are currently on our waiting list to be served. The state legislature, when they created the CASA statute, created it as a mandate that every child who has a case with child welfare should have a CASA volunteer appointed to them in order to serve as the objective eyes and ears of the juvenile court judge and make recommendations to the judge as to what services these children need to either maintain their healthy home with their parents or continue to grow and into possibly an adoptive or guardianship home. So to give you just an example of a quick story, about a year and a half ago, four children were removed from their parents. They lived in a shipping container, and it was breached by the SWAT team, and the parents had stockpiled weapons and drugs and cash, and these children were living there, two very small children and two teenagers. And those children were placed in two different homes in Ashland, one community, one relative, and they had a CASA since day one on that case, and the CASA has been instrumental in working with the school system, working with IEPs for the older children. One of the older teens has a severe medical issue, and the CASA has been weekly helping manage that kid's care to make sure that he is medically sound and healthy. And the CASA also appears monthly before the juvenile court judge to make recommendations as to what the parents need. No surprise, the parents are opioid addicted. And are arrested on a weekly basis, and our catch and release system in Jackson County that we have. So this CASA has been instrumental in connecting and facilitating these cross-systems approach to making sure that these children are safe and cared for in our system and reporting those recommendations to the judge. Our CASAs are the only individuals in the system who do this function. Again, they're volunteers. I have 10 staff that I supervise, and so we're heavily volunteer-driven, volunteer-focused. My boss, Jennifer, turns a dime into a dollar somehow. She's magic. So we have a large return on our investment in terms of also helping keep these kids out of juvenile detention, helping keep them in a home so they're not homeless, and also helping connect their parents with resources that they need to be successful and hopefully reunify, which is our end goal.
Question.
I just have a question about some of the numbers for Ashland. So I think it said that there were 18 in Ashland, so that's correct, there's 18. Then on the top you mentioned that the funding will enable 19 who live in Ashland. Is that the current 19, or is that the children in Ashland who are currently on the waiting list that this is going to support new?
Great question. This will support new children that are currently still on our waiting list waiting for CASA from the city of Ashland.
So just remind me the scope of your total budget and then how much you're asking for.
So we're asking for $7,500 each of 2 years. Okay. And our total budget actually has just reached over $1 million.
Okay.
$1 million.
That's what I remember. Thank you.
Yeah. For the first time ever.
Yeah. Do you partner with any other agencies in Ashland?
Any agency that touches Ashland, we partner with. Yeah, all of the agencies in this room, we will have some crossover with. And our main community partners are Community Works, La Clinica, CAC, and any resource that we think a parent or a child can take advantage of, we'll partner.
Specifically, Maslow does similar work.
So Maslow is not a legal party to the case. We go into the court. We have full legal right and access to every body of information about the child. So the CASA is able to receive legally 100% of the information about the child without anyone's permission, without any HIPAA, FERPA doesn't apply to CASAs. And they go into the court system and they speak directly to the other person without a law degree, doesn't allow to pass that bar, speak directly to the judge, write court reports, and make recommendations also to the Citizens Review Board and in DHS meetings. They are the voice for that child. As one team said, my CASA is my words. I don't want to talk to adults, and my CASA does it for me. Mm-hmm. So they're the only other party, aside from an attorney, that has full legal access to everything about that child. Yes.
If there aren't any other questions, I think you hit the button, so that was perfect. So thank you.
Thank you. So much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the next group up is the Center for Nonprofit Legal Services.
Children's Advocacy Center.
I'm Deborah Lee, and I'm the executive director of the Center for Nonprofit Legal Services. And we're asking for $15,000 to support our project, which is furthering affordable and fair housing in Ashland. And we do keep track of the demographics, and for the last fiscal year, we served 45 Ashland residents, and of that total, 9 were housing cases, and the total caseload we had was $594 people that we died in Jefferson County. I think we will want to make that down. And we're really appreciative of Ashland's support, and we leverage your contribution to create a whole legal services program for the city of Ashland. One of the things that we're trying to do is work in community building to create more housing. And we are involved with the Continuum of Care Board and helping to create the coordinated entry and then provide supportive services for homeless.
Ready for questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Open up, guys. There's one.
I have a question. I think I heard you say that 9 of the 45 Ashland residents were for affordable housing?
Had some housing.
Okay, so can you share what some of the other services were if they were for affordable housing?
I would love to. So we have 5 individuals that had collection cases, so that's like the where they have bills and the collector that's coming after them. We have one expungement case, and what we're trying to do is to remove the legal barrier of a criminal record so that they can access housing or work or public benefits. We had 8 cases on child custody, and we take family cases where there's minor children involved so that we can stabilize the family that's breaking up. And so custody is always a huge issue, and it's usually very conflicted and emotional. So having an attorney assist the family is really critical. We have housing, healthcare case. We had 3 Social Security disability cases and 1 supplemental security income. So the SSI people are low wage earners, and so they're getting kind of like the minimum, the floor, the benefits. But it's critical that if you're disabled to actually have a source of income, and that allows people to stay in there. We have a number of immigration cases. We have 1 citizenship case. There's 3 Violence Against Women Act self-petitions where an individual, usually women, but there are men that face domestic violence. And there's a self-petition that's given to the individuals that are survivors of domestic violence. And it really requires a lot of investigation and evidence so that then the immigration would allow the person to stay in the U.S. and move towards legal status. So they actually, even if they are not lawfully here but have suffered from domestic violence, they can actually gain access to legal status. We have 1 family unity case. There are a number of, we had 2 cases where individuals wanted to reinstate their license. So the reinstatement of license is critical for people who want to go to work. And then, of course, people staying at home. We have 2 guardianships. Oftentimes there are individuals who have suffered from either physical or mental disability and need a surrogate decision maker to assist in their care and make personal decisions for that protected person.
We're up at the 5, but I have a question if I can
get it. Well, that's part of the question.
Well, the questions are all in the 5, so we're going to try to go.
Okay.
But I'm just really curious about the new rental law that came in, because that seems huge in terms of, is that going to be able to be dealt with by y'all?
We have been having cases in which people fall in the middle between the time that the law was passed and...
So you've already seen some of it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And I think Linda's trying to create a venue where we could talk about the Senate bill.
I think that would be great. I mean, that's a good coverage for what we might invest in.
So there's a lot of ambiguity,
right. And
I think the tenants are being taken advantage of. Mm-hmm. We saw 1 rental increase of 25%. We're talking about the 7%, right? So it's difficult to be a tenant,
yeah. And
so we're ready, prepared to deal with the housing issue, which is what we're asking you to.
It's right on our strategic focus here. Thank you so much.
You.
That's great. Thank you for all that.
Okay.
So now it is time for the Children's Advocacy Center of Jackson County.
Are they not here?
No. Okay. No. Next will be Community Works.
Hi. Welcome. I'm Morgan Thompson from Community Works.
Right.
I'm the executive director.
you've heard this, but I have to say, I really appreciate you all are doing. It's an honorable task to consider social organizations and their needs. And everyone here deserves a vote of credit, as well as these wonderful organizations who are out there doing the work that's so important for those who can't come here today. As you know, Community Works provides hope, healing, and supportive services for anyone experiencing homeless or near homelessness due to sexual abuse, domestic violence, stalking, and trafficking. We do this with a multitude of services all throughout our county. For many of you may not know, we have 46 employees, and of those, each week, 1,690 hours of direct service are being provided from Butte Falls all the way up through Ashland. We have our staff embedded in law enforcement agencies at DHS, at healthcare providers, courthouse, and all these different places. And I've had the pleasure to work with many of these organizations here today. So I'm here to talk about three different grants. There are three important programs within our agency: Gun House Shelter, Helpline, and Sexual Assault Services.
Okay.
I see that's in alphabetical order, so
right. So you're good. Go.
As you all probably know, Gun House Shelter is the only safe shelter. It's residential for anyone experiencing personal victimization of what I described. It's a 30-day shelter. However, many times we have people stay a lot longer because we know the repetition of going back to the abuser because they don't have other options is prevalent. Plus, they're moving right out of crisis, and just as they start to get stable, then they have to leave. So as a result, our numbers this year, and it's from our last fiscal year, reflect 237 residents who stayed with us. Of those, 40% of them are children. Of the residents that stayed with us from Ashland, there were 15%, so 9 adults and 6 children. I wanted to point out something valuable in that of the, we had 24% that were from out of our county. And this is an important number because it's about safety. So while it's important to think, oh, who in our area is really getting the services they're needing, part of it is around safety. And if they can't be safe, then there's no sense in keeping them here. So a lot of times we'll work with clients who don't actually go to the shelter, but we get them up to Portland, or we go down to Reading or someplace else. So just recognize that as well. The numbers are a little bit lower this year also because of two main reasons. I spoke about the fact that they're staying longer. It's about a 10% increase in the amount of time they're staying. But also we received a nice funding, which was able to give us some repairs that we needed. It's an old home that's wood frame. It needed to be repainted on the outside. There was some lead paint, so we needed abatement. So we were closed for over 5 weeks.
Wow.
Now, during that time, your first thought may be, well, what happened to all those survivors? Well, we collaborated with other DVSA agencies within our areas, as well as we put some up in hotels so they could continue the service, but we didn't count them in the shelter numbers. And so that had a reflection of, if you looked at us over the years, we're usually about 340, 360 in that particular year, often those are the 2 years. Because of the shelter and because of our continuation of services outside the shelter, we're able to create that continuum of care. So we have advocates who pick them up at the shelter and take them to healthcare providers, to the courts, to DHS, wherever they may need to transition through those trauma times. Do you have any particular questions that I can help you with tonight?
I think we might have some, but just somebody say you have three things, so we'll get 15.
I'm going fast.
No, I know, you're doing good, but so we're just going to take them one at a time. So
okay.
This would be questions about Gun House. Everybody's good? Okay, well, you want to...
Are you all ready for me to go?
We're ready for the next one.
So I think it's valuable for you all to learn that... For any domestic violence sexual assault organization, it's a requirement by the Department of Justice that we have a crisis line. It is a crisis line specifically for those services. However, Helpline does far more than that. Helpline provides services for anyone who calls us anywhere in the United States as well as this county. So they can call us, and it's been going on since the early 70s. And this is a service where they can call us when they need emotional support at 2 in the morning and they can't sleep that night. They can call us. I had someone who called me asking me how long I could keep vinegar and water sitting on the counter for 2 weeks. And could she drink it? I was like, no, you cannot drink that. Don't talk to me about that. Call your health care provider. So it has a plethora. We have been trained staff and volunteers on trauma-informed care, on suicide, de-escalation. While we are not health care providers of any sort, we recognize that if somebody is feeling suicidal, the immediate need of helping them talk it down, getting that warm handoff with someone who is a healthcare provider in mental health is what is most important, as well as we provide the critical gateway entry to all the services that we provide. One of the special things about Helpline is that we have over 80 volunteers for the whole agency, but 64% of them work on the Helpline phone. They love it. We have some volunteers who actually have been working with us for over 10, 15 years. It's a beautiful way to be able to train the community. We provide 3 training programs every year, 2 days for any of you all who would like to participate. We talk about what's the power of cycle and control, what are the barriers for someone experiencing domestic violence, what is oppression, what is it about biases that we put in this community and how do we change it, and most importantly, active listening, because emotional support is what all of us need. And that's what a Helpline volunteer or staff person does each and every day. In order to perform these functions, we need a coordinator, and that's our volunteer coordinator. She's a saint. She not only does a lot of the training, she also does all the scheduling, and you can imagine with a 24/7 service, it's quite the schedule when you're working with volunteers. So she provides a lot of services around that, plus she goes out in the community. She's our educator. She talks to the Rotary. She talks to schools. She's there. So that's another way. Questions? Oh, I didn't talk numbers. Sorry. Let me just do numbers real quick. 8,840 calls this past year. Of those who identify, because they're not required to tell us where they're from, but of those who identify, 519 were from your area. And there were about 15% outside the county. I think it speaks to, again, that emotional support. I've been on the phone at 2 in the morning with someone who was a sexual assault survivor from 25 years ago, and she just needed that emotional support, and I listened to her as we talked it through.
Well, I have a question, unless anybody else has got one. I just wondered about cultural competency in relation to the volunteers and how you're able to make that, and whether people from either Spanish-speaking or other cultures are calling in, mm-hmm. what are they finding when they get there?
That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. So, 2 things. One is we have 5 staff that speak Spanish, so that is their first language, and they're also bilingual, bicultural. But also, we have a language line that we do a connection with, and they are bonded and help us through if there's another language that we're not able to provide.
So the bilingual staff, bicultural staff, are available, but they may yes. not be taking it, but someone,
right.
and they're pretty available
oh, yes.
throughout the country.
Mm-hmm. We have someone at the shelter, and then we have 4 other advocates that are either 2 in the office or also outside the community.
I have a quick question, kind of piggybacking on what you said, Rich. For your staff, are they also trained? I know when people call in, they might not identify, but if somebody is in the LGBTQ community, how would your staff? We're ringing all over. Are we done?
That's fine. So,
okay.
For Helpline, because. For anyone, not just Helpline, but for anyone, we ask them, if you feel comfortable,
sharing your information. Would you be willing to share? We also speak to the fact that no one ever sees this. This is confidential. It's privilege, which is just like a lawyer. So we do not share that with anyone. It's statistical data. Actually, DOJ doesn't want us for Helpline to identify anything about anyone. So it becomes a bit of a conundrum when we're working with grantors who want that sort of data. And we understand why, and even down to they don't want to know where they're living.
I'm not sure about the data. I'm more about the training.
Yeah, we're all trained on all of that. Yeah. Because they receive 40 hours of training, which includes that as well.
One more question.
I've heard your training is excellent. I just had a question about volume. We, in Ashland, you mentioned 519 calls. Mm-hmm. On the application, it said Medford had 4,226 calls. Mm-hmm. But the amount of money Medford gave you was $5,700, and we gave you $6,884. How do you explain the
Well, I can't explain what City of Medford does. I wish
okay.
I
could. So you
but I would say that I asked for more than I asked from you all.
Okay.
From the City of Medford. And it's how they
And do you also ask Jackson County for
funds? Pardon me?
Do you receive funds from Jackson County?
Yes, and Jackson County. They help support. And then some of it's from donors, you know. But the most of it comes from state and federal funds that are from the, most of it's from the Department of Human Services. Does that help answer?
Yes.
Thank you.
And so you're doing now the
sexual assault services.
Okay.
Yes. Community work is identified as a dual services agency. So what that means is that we provide services for both domestic violence and sexual assault survivors. That's not true in every single nonprofit that provides services for survivors in the nation. Sexual assault services began in the early 1970s as Rape Crisis Council. And it was the first type of program in Oregon. For our agency, this entire program has had the fastest growth of resources and advocacy in the last 4 years. I think it really speaks to the need and the lack of support it's had just nationally in this area of victimization. We have received critical funds to do more outreach services in rural areas, as well as we've received funds to work with Children's Advocacy Center and have an advocate on staff there. And then lastly, we just received the funds for the sex trafficking, which we are able to start our first task force, which is so valuable to our community and survivors. Over this past year, there were over 80 hospital calls for forensic exams for sexual assault survivors. 15 of those calls were from the Ashland Hospital here. While Jackson County SART nurses provide the forensic examination for those survivors, it's the community works advocate who provides the emotional support during that forensic exam and after their ongoing supportive services. This past year, we had 280 clients who identified as sexual assault survivors. Of those, 37 of them were from Ashland, so 14%. Medford had 59%, but outside the county, there were 7%. The funds from the City of Ashland help with this core program of providing advocacy and important clothing that's needed during that hospital forensic exam, because those things are used for evidence. as well as it helps us through the advocacy as they go through the court system or our support groups. And this can go on for weeks, months, and sometimes years. The outcome is a really positive one because you all are making an impact on individuals who are at their most vulnerable. Do you have any questions?
Well, it's a curiosity question. I mean, what is the statewide network for this issue that you participated
in? Task force, you mean?
Well, I'm asking. I don't.
Well,
we have. We're here.
Right.
What other statewide other groups do you participate in, or how does that work?
We're members of the sexual assault task force, which is comes from the Attorney General's office. We meet quarterly, and then there are committees along with that. They work on legislation. They work on different ways in which to find bills to get more funding that way. And then the Department of Justice as a whole builds on that.
I was just thinking about collaboration. If you're kind of unique in your spot, is that where is all the collaboration coming from?
Well, we get a lot of collaboration, you know, through our other sister agencies that we have. For instance, in Josephine County, we work a lot with Women's Crisis. I mean, from a Southern Oregon,
right.
You can kind of feel in Southern Oregon like you're kind of forgot about at the state level. 51% I read are up in Portland, but. So as a result, you know, we work a lot with our other sister organizations, Klamath Falls, Women's Crisis Support Team, Illinois Valley, you know, all the way over to the coast.
Okay.
I had a question about what is in the CARE Act, because part of this you're requesting goes to
that. That's a good question. So in the CARE Act, there's going to be a set of new clothing, because if their clothes are taken for forensic exams, so usually they're soft, you know, expandable clothing. And then there's also, which would include hygiene, underwear, new underwear, socks, a pair of, like, sandals or shoes, you know, flip-floppy type shoes if they need them. We also have quite a bit of material about hope and healing during that process. We have our cards in there. We let them know we're calling them within 24 hours. To not only check on them, but to see what other services we can provide for them. We also have some things to give them self-care, like around a small blanket or a teddy bear or some sort of thing. So desire.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Thank you.
Let's see. Next up is Community Volunteer Network, Colorize.
I'm Kristen Milligan. I'm the Executive Director of Community Volunteer Network, and I'm also back-to-back requesting through two different programs.
Okay.
So under the Community Volunteer Network, we have two different programs that we operate. We operate the Foster Grandparent Program and the RSVP Program. Under the RSVP Program, we have our Call the Right Program, which is what we're specifically requesting for, and I'll go over right now. So our Colorado program provides medical transportation for folks. We utilize volunteer drivers who are 55 and older, and they are serving clients who are 60 years or older or have disabilities. Volunteers use their own vehicles, and we reimburse them for their mileage. One-fourth of Jackson County's residents are over the age of 60. The data is about the same for the city of Ashland. We've been providing this service for over 26 years in our community, and the need has only continued to grow. We have a wait list right now. As of today, we have a wait list of approximately 40 people who are waiting for this service. 15% of those, so six of those right now, are Ashland residents. We do prioritize our clients based on their health needs. So most of our rides support patients receiving life-sustaining care, so that's going to look like dialysis, or infusions, but we do also provide other care for folks who just need to get to a physical therapy appointment maybe twice a month. Something special about our program is really the bond that's created between the driver and client, and that's really especially for the clients that we serve who, again, are going to dialysis maybe three times a week or infusions five times a week. having the support of their driver. Again, these are seniors, serving seniors. Some of the folks are really homebound. They look forward to their doctor appointment so that they can have this communication and have that human connection and partnership. Sometimes our volunteers actually sit in the doctor's offices, you know, depending on the relationship with the client, actually sit through their appointments with them as well, which is really special. Ashland residents represent approximately 20% of our program's clients and approximately 25% of our program's current volunteer base. So what that looks like for our last fiscal year, we provided 552 rides for 37 Ashland residents. And most of our clients, just to give you a little information, most of our clients in Ashland are going from Ashland to Medford for doctor's appointments. We do have a few Ashland to Ashland appointments, but most of them are logging pretty good mileage going from Ashland to Medford. And while we do try to really maximize our volunteers, so if you live in Ashland, we'll try to get somebody in Ashland to take them to that Medford appointment. That's not always possible. So often we have someone from Medford driving to Ashland to pick up that person, take them to Medford, drop them back off in Ashland, and then head back. In Jackson County last year, our volunteer drivers traveled a total of 50,000 miles, 757, which I just think is incredible because that's the equivalent of driving from here to Miami seven different times. and that's just in the last year. One of the questions on Linda's email that you wanted us to talk about was, you know, what would happen if we didn't receive funding or support from City of Ashland. And for us, that would be difficult because we would struggle to be able to continue to provide support for our existing client base in Ashland. So towards the end of our fiscal year, you know, we do start running out of those mileage reimbursement funds. We can manage those and anticipate them only so much to a point. So if we were to not receive funding from the City of Ashland, we would have to start looking at limiting our long-range trips and providing the shorter trips, which could reduce or potentially, in worst-case scenario, eliminate our ability to serve Ashland. Lastly, I just wanted to add that we're great partners with various agencies and other organizations. We're passionate about ensuring that seniors have transportation options. I actually serve on a committee for RVTD for their statewide transportation improvement fund, which has really increased my knowledge of the service gaps in our community, and particularly in Ashland. So we don't duplicate any other transportation or service. We simply want to ensure that all seniors in our community can get to their doctor's appointments safely, easily, affordably, and on time. Anyone have any questions for me?
Always the first question.
What's your accident rate?
Man, I actually don't have that percentage. It is low. I took the position from someone who has retired after 26 years in the role. I have been in the role for 7 months. I have seen one accident, and the client wasn't in the car. So it does not happen often.
Well,
we do provide secondary insurance for our volunteers.
I just did a little, it was probably bad math, but it looks like you were about $10 to $15 a ride. I mean, that's incredible.
I didn't think
for what you're asking for? Is that right?
So, I'm sorry, I'm not sure what you're
It didn't look like it would pay the gas.
For the 30 cents?
What?
For the 30 cents of mileage? I'm sorry, I'm not sure what you're looking at to get the...
I just looked at how much money I thought you were asking for and divided it by the number of rides that you were providing it. Came out pretty low to me, but anyway, I just didn't know if you don't have that figure. I was just in my own weird adjustment.
We're not the only vendors.
Yeah. Another question: how do you think Lyft being in the region will affect this program?
Are you talking about Valley Lyft? Or are you talking
Uber and Lyft?
I don't think it's going to impact us very much at all. Honestly, I wish that it would because I would just love to see that wait list go down. A lot of our clients simply can't afford the ride. Lyft and Uber is obviously less expensive than a cab service, for, definitely. But again, when you're talking about people that are most of our clients that have multiple rides a week need, that cost adds up. So even if it's, you know, half the cost of a taxi cab, if they're having to, you know, go back and forth from Medford here, you know, five times in a week and living on fixed income, it becomes very challenging.
Okay, you want to go to the, you're on the next one?
Sure. So the next program before you is our foster grandparent program. And again, this is completely different, a completely different program that is also part of our national senior service that we get from the federal government. And federal government does require, under both our grant applications, that we receive matching funds from local community sources like the City of Ashland. So under this program, we have volunteers that, again, are age 55 and above, but they are serving specifically with youth in our community. So they're tutoring, mentoring children from birth to 21 years old. Foster grandparents volunteer anywhere from 15 to 40 hours a week in supervised sites. That's public schools, that's nonprofits, and other other nonprofit sites and even our Jackson County services as well. Currently in Ashland, they are serving at YMCA and SOU, and they're not currently serving right now, but in this past fiscal year, we've also had volunteers at Head Start and Walker Elementary. And our volunteers earn $2.65 an hour for their volunteerism. The program brings joy to our seniors and a renewed sense of purpose and accomplishment. This program is a difficult one because it doesn't always fit in one specific checkbox for a grant application that crosses the line of senior services, senior wellness, children's education. But in this application, it was intentionally included under the maintaining houses and basic needs strategic priority. And that's specifically because of the financial impact of that $2.65 an hour stipend plus mileage reimbursement has. And I know that amount seems so low, and it is. That's from the federal government at the time the program was initiated. That was minimum wage. And they just never continued to catch it up. But we do have a lot of seniors in our community that are living on just very low fixed monthly incomes. As you all are keenly aware, Ashland is not immune to that crisis, in spite of what some outsiders think. I'm an Ashland resident, and I hear those kinds of things all the time. So, you know, their fixed monthly incomes remain the same while everything around them is going up. We have volunteers that are living on $600 a month and struggling to keep housed and fed. We have three Ashland volunteers right now, and this isn't specific to Ashland, but one specific Ashland volunteer had talked to a couple weeks ago because she's considering moving because her rent just went up, so now she can't afford to drive her car. She can't afford the gas anymore, so she has to take that money to cover her rent. And we were thankful we were able to reach out to Eileen at Ashland Senior Services Division and get her a bus pass. So Ashland was very supportive in that so that she could continue the volunteerism that she loves. And the average check that's issued to a volunteer is about $213 a month. We recently had a volunteer who earned a check in the amount of $900. So it really can vary on the amount of service that they want to provide. Last year in Jackson County, we disbursed $185,000 to volunteers. So that's how much the total came to. Ashland seniors only received 2.5% of that. And I would love to see an increase in our participation in Ashland with recruiting more volunteers and partnering with more schools here. So that way more of those dollars can go to the City of Ashland volunteers. Those stipend dollars, so that $185,000 comes directly from the federal government. That is something that they provide us. So the more volunteers that we can get, the more volunteers are receiving money and just going directly back into our community and into the City of Ashland. I want to address head on a couple of questions that I get when people are surprised that $2.65 an hour plus mileage can hold such significance to our folks and our population. Because you might just ask, you know, why wouldn't somebody just go back to work? Why wouldn't they work minimum wage? And the answer is that our stipend is non-taxable and non-reportable. So a lot of our volunteers are receiving food stamps or are in HUD, low-income subsidized housing. And if they were to receive income, they would no longer qualify, or it could cost them more money, or they would lose those services entirely. So this is a way for them to be able to kind of get around that and be able to support themselves. We also provide paid time off. So every hour that a volunteer serves for us, every 5 hours that a volunteer serves for us, they get 1 hour of paid time off. So our volunteers use that in the summertime if they're in a school setting. They use that during winter breaks, spring breaks. And again, they're relying on that monthly check to cover themselves. As far as supporting basic housing needs with that $2.65 an hour, I can do it in one story. We recently had a mail glitch that resulted in our stipend checks being received one day later than usual. Literally one day. The mail changed their time on us and we didn't know. We had call after call after call from volunteers who were panicked because they were waiting for that check to pay for their car payment, to get food, and to pay the rent. I had one woman I was talking to that was very upset, and I was trying to understand, you know, what she needed so that I could just get her help that day. And she was literally waiting by the mailbox for that check so that she could go buy her medication.
All right. Let's take some questions now. Okay. Timely.
Do I have it correctly that there were two volunteers from Ashland who are getting the services, 62 in Medford?
We have currently three volunteers in Ashland.
Okay. So my question, So my question is, that seemed very low, and given our senior population, what are you doing to increase the number of seniors you're getting involved in Ashland?
So we're putting together an outreach agenda and plan with strategically outlining those groups that we want to meet with. Unfortunately, we do have to tick a lot of boxes, so they have to be, you know, this low income. There are a lot of thresholds that have to be met that can sometimes be a little tricky. So we need to partner with more of the churches here, with more of the other groups that are in the city of Ashland. Again, we recognize that number is low, and when we looked at that, it was only 2.5% of that 185,000
yeah.
coming out.
Yeah.
We want to do more in Ashland, and we know that there are more low-income seniors here. So we need to be targeting them better. So it is part of an entire strategic outlook because we've got room to increase a lot of our volunteers based on the stipend that we're permitted. And Ashland is a part of that plan for us.
Thank you.
Yes.
Great. One more question.
On your statement of functional expenses for the year, do you have a line item that's $50,000 in legal fees? What's that about?
That was a... sorry, I'm blanking on the word. We had a legal incident that was our deductible. An unexpected deductible that we had to manage.
I don't understand.
We had an incident with one of our volunteers, and we got put on notice that we might that we're going to have to pay for that. So that's our legal deductible for our insurance coverage for that incident.
You mentioned that they were working at YMCA and different things. Is this mentoring done in a group setting, or is it done in a one-on-one setting?
So it's always supervised setting.
Mm-hmm.
So there always needs to be a teacher or a professional in the classroom. But it does depend on the location. So it might be a reading group with three or four kids that the teacher identified and said, you know, these kids really need help reading. So it might be that group of kids at the YMCA. It might be, you know, site supervisor coming up to our volunteer and saying, this kid is really struggling. Can we focus on supporting that student? So it might be more what it depends on the need of the group
right.
and the teachers.
But it's always with, like, another adult.
Another adult always has to be there.
Yep. Thank you so much. That was very good.
Thank you.
Very, very direct. Food Angels. Hello.
She's here.
Oh, there she is. All right, great. Thank you.
I'm so short, they didn't.
Hi.
Hi. I'm
Pamela
Joy. I'm the founder and director of the Ashland Food Angels, which is my 24th year doing this. And as I mentioned when I talked to you all before, last year we hit a record high of collecting and giving away nearly a half million pounds of food. Our regular recipients at the moment include the food bank almost daily, Uncle Food's Meals every week, the Peace Meals, Head Start, Jackson County Fuel Committee, and various children's programs. What I'd like to focus on right now is some of the long-term effects. I was looking back over time at what changes, what impacts Food Angels had. The food bank, and I may have mentioned this last time, that when I started this, the food bank wouldn't take produce.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of just gentle encouragement. And now the food bank has a lot of produce, not just from Food Angels, but a lot from Food Angels. This sounds funny, but the Ashland High School women's golf team is there because of the Ashland Food Angels, or at least in part because of the Ashland Food Angels, because every year I do yard sales to raise money, and one year one of the volunteers had a whole locker full of golf equipment, and of course a lot of it didn't sell in the yard sale, and I was thinking, where's the best for this to go? And the high school women's sports person was like, I've been praying for this. Now I can start the women's golf team. So that I'm very proud of. Food Angels had a very strong impact on Catalyst and SAGE, the alternative programs at the high school. The letters I got back they made me cry. I mean, the students were not wanting to come to school, and then suddenly there were boxes of food. Ooh, I want to go to school. I want to see what's in the box of food. So that was something that we did for many years. And also through the high school, we've helped a lot of students get their community service hours by volunteering with us. The Market of Choice, we worked with the Market of Choice from before they opened, and they've been a big major donor. And I suggested that they might want to start being part of the recycling program, since Food Angels is very much about keeping stuff out of the landfill. And they didn't want to do it because they didn't want to give the time for somebody to move the stuff from the front of the store to the back of the store. So for a year, I went in and I volunteered and I said, okay, I'm moving it to the back of the store, to the bins. And then after that, they were willing to do it themselves, but it took a lot of patience. Worked with the SOU food services so that they started donating their leftover food products. At first, it was going through Food Angels to various things like Jackson County Fuel Committee, and then I linked it with the Uncle Food's meal and the Peace House meals, and it goes directly to them now. I'm like stepping out of the picture. And the same thing with Albertsons and Tom's Oregon Produce Warehouse. Who are down by the food bank, connected them with the food bank so that they're now directly donating things to the food bank. Because we don't want anything to go to waste, we started a program so that all food that wasn't fit for people would go to a farmer. And I linked that farmer up with not just Food Angels, but other stores where they could get the produce that wasn't being given to people. We started a community compost drop so that people who don't have a compostability, they bring it to the Angels, and it either goes in the compost or goes to the food waste for animals. So those are some of the long-term things that have happened. They're more that I can't remember.
Can we open up for questions now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a couple questions just about the budget. So it looks like the total materials and services are $20,000, and then your program expenses are $8,000. So you have about a $28,000 budget per year, is that correct? And then your fundraising or getting through contributions, a portion of that, and then $20,000 is coming from this grant?
Well, there's equipment that we need that we don't, like my computer is dying, and I need the computer to run the program, and so that's part of it. And the expenses, even though it said $8,000, the expenses have been more every year. We can't, we use old vans, and they have repairs needed more frequently than newer vans, and so I can't judge ahead of time how much we're going to need for those repairs.
I wrote the numbers down somewhere.
So last year it was 8,000, but this year you're projecting 20,000.
Last year was probably more than 8,000, okay.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. And also the part of that money is for the utilities, and last year the utilities were higher than ever. We have a cool room, and we have an air conditioner, and with the smoke and the fires and the heat, we had to keep it on. And I don't think that amount got into that 8,000, but some of the months, my utility bill was over $400. Mm-hmm. And that was because of the air conditioning.
I think we're going to, that would be the last question, but thank you so much. We really appreciate it. It's terrific.
Thank you.
So, Jackson County SARP.
So our grant is for our sexual violence prevention program. It is primarily in the schools. We have a kindergarten through 12th grade curriculum, and we do sexual violence prevention classes every single grade, every year, kindergarten through 12th grade. We also do work at SOU. Just last year, we trained all of the SOU athletes on sex education and other things around sexual violence. And we work with an SOU class, sexual wellness there. We also do things in the community. We do parent nights for the school district. We do trainings at the school staff on mandatory reporting, on errand law. We do a lot of Title IX consultations and information. So that's our general program. In terms of, one of the questions was about the comparison to Ashland and Jackson County. So Ashland is one of our priority districts for our gender-based violence program. So it is between a half and a third of our total students served, if we're looking just at students in K-12. It's about, I believe it's 2784. Both from 2018. Central Point and Phoenix Talent are the other two primary districts. And then we're also in scattered classes in Medford and Rogue River and some of the other classes. But Ashland has a very high level of numbers for Ashland. I could keep talking, or I don't know if there may be questions would be better.
So I'm not looking at your grant. I'm just looking at the question I wrote down. So you tell me if it makes sense. I didn't understand your ethnicity numbers, the numbers for Ashland.
Okay.
Do you see what they are? The Ashland or Medford numbers, it wasn't clear to me what's Ashland in that.
This is all Ashland, the 2784, because this is the Ashland grant. So this 2784 is the Ashland students that we...
Scratch off
curriculum.
The Medford.
Yeah, this is the same application
curriculum.
For
okay.
Ashland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Question?
Who is paying? How does that work? Who's paying? Okay, so are we looking at the whole organization budget? Is that that first page? Yes, so as I wrote down here in the bottom, that 383, is that what we're looking at? Yes, so we are a fiscal sponsor. Our organization
Is a fiscal sponsor for the You Have Options program, which is the Ashland training program. And so that $383,000 was a contract that we had with the New York Police Department to do trainings for NYPD. So it's it had to be reflected in our organization budget because this is the 990 budget. But it's not really part of our, it's certainly not part of the program, the prevention program. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I think we did, and I don't see any other questions, so thank you so
much. Can I add just one thing?
Go ahead, add it in. Yep.
One of the things that I wanted to say is that our prevention program is not specifically just risk reduction, right? The prevention that we are looking at is what we call primary prevention, and the focus there is on culture change. So this is not about teaching people how not to be victimized. This is about how do we change an entire culture so that the levels of gender violence over the years, our gender-based violence, will go down. And so a lot of that is training on issues around how oppression is a root cause of sexual and gender-based violence. It's a lot of consent, but also things like empathy. And so you can imagine in kindergarten through 12th grade, the first probably 5 years, we're dealing with a lot of education that is not specific to sexual assault, but is more around these precursor ideas. The long-term goal is for students and then community members as a whole to become agents of change in this issue. Because we're looking at 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys will experience sexual abuse before they turn 18, and 1 in 4 women and 1 in 33 men during their lifetime. So that's staggering numbers. Sexual violence, it's hard to evaluate the prevention efforts for it, but we do know that early and often in starting to change the culture that supports this kind of violence as well.
Thank you for that addition. That was an, all right.
Yes. In addition to the prevention aspect of the program, you also do forensic exams?
The SARP has multiple programs. So we run the same program for the county, and that's the forensic exams, and we do about 110 a year in the county. We also have support groups. We have a resource specialist. So we have multiple programs, many of them about response. This is our prevention program. One of the things we do see as a result of these classes is an increase in disclosures. We have 15 disclosures specifically based on classes, as a result of classes that we gave in the schools in the county this year. So the prevention feeds into the response.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
La Clinica?
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me. My name is Rob Bauman. I'm the team lead for the Mobile Health Center with La Clinica. For those of you that don't know, our Mobile Health Center is a 40-foot RV that has 2 medical exam rooms where we can meet just about anything that any other medical clinic does. And we function as a walk-in clinic. We also have 2 dental chairs for emergency dental situations to try to help remedy those problems for the population that we work with, which is primarily homeless and those that are just living in poverty. Today I'm bringing before you a request for $5,000 to help fund a community health worker who is also bilingual, bicultural. You'll see in the numbers that we are pushing that 1,350 work on line for 1,350 patients seen this year. About 185 of those so far are just in the last 12 months are just here in Ashland for a half day a week coming to the United Methodist Church on a Tuesday afternoon specials. Some of the questions that you guys have asked are to please address the clientele, the activities, programs that are specific to Ashland. So on the Mobile Health Center, we do a lot more than just meeting the medical and dental needs of our patients. We also sit down with them and we talk to them about what their mental health situation is, behavioral health, substance use disorder, housing, and we help sign them up for OHP. In some cases, I was previously the community health worker on the Mobile Health Center, and so this speaks especially to my passion here today. The community health workers are especially designed to meet patients where they are. to have true empathy with them and to learn to identify what motivates them and help to encourage them in those directions for moving forward in stages of change. One example of this was just this last fall, we had a patient who has alcohol use disorder and wasn't ready for change. And by the winter months coming up, being homeless, he started to talk about, what am I going to do? I'm living out in the rain. I don't want to do another winter like this. And I was able to talk to him about, well, you know, if you engage in alcohol treatment, you could potentially get into resident treatment. And so through that, he made the decision. I helped him with transportation, with the planning piece, to go and engage in services at the ARC. And last he checked in with me, he was sober. He was working in this field, which he hadn't done in years. And he was housed still after having completed treatment. What we do out there really matters. It really makes a huge difference. This is the first time that we're bringing this grant to you. We're asking for funds, but we've been coming to Ashland since 2012. And I can tell you that even though we help people sign up for OHP and we do everything we can to help get them on insurance, what we bring in is not enough to fund what we do. Our service on the Mobile Health Center could not happen without a community like this and the community volunteers, well, not so much volunteers, but community money funding us to do what we do. And if we aren't able to fund this position, I will have to keep working two positions. Which I can tell you, I feel like I can't do either one well. Plus, they will be bicultural, bilingual, which is also missing, and is one piece that I have not been able to fill either. And so, I ask for you guys to be able to really reach into your hearts and say, is this something that is making a difference? I believe yes.
I'll open the questions this time.
Yeah.
Did I see something in the paper about changes in the location of the mobile clinic that's going to happen, or was that? Did I make that up?
I don't know what was posted in the newspaper. Do you know what might have been posted, if anything?
No. Was it?
There's no changes in the location for the. That's the correct answer for this year.
So, we're always open to discussion about where we're going to go. Uh-huh. I can tell you, I believe that we have been in Ashland since the inception in 2012. Mm-hmm. And we have no plans of moving. It is one of our busiest sites, where we do a lot of good. And actually, we're talking to the winter shelter about potentially expanding services in Ashland come next fall.
This is really getting unobjective, but you also have the feet washers.
So that's a partnership that we have with the OHSU.
That is so outstanding. And it took a while for people to figure out that it wasn't weird, but it's really working.
what a way to show service.
Yeah.
And the feet of the homeless are so beaten up. It's so important. Any other questions?
Yes. I really appreciate the services you provide. However, $5,000 is really a relatively small amount when you look at the total budget that La Clinica receives in terms of federal funding and matching grants. If you didn't get this $5,000 from us, do you need it to show community support? Do you need the full amount? Or would a portion of it show that we support you and allow you to leverage other funds?
So, we do need it to show community support, so I'll say yes to that. Without the guaranteed $5,000, I don't know that we would be able to backfill the position as soon as we'd like. The sooner we know that position is funded, the sooner we can start serving the populations the best ways that we can. So Michelle, do you have anything else to add to that?
Sure. I'm Michelle Wilson, Open Development, and just want to share with that La Clinica has, we have 23 health centers. The primary health care centers are the ones primarily funded by federal funding, and we really work to have those self-sustaining. The outreach services are not. They only happen through community support.
Right.
And so we are really trying to be proactive to expand beyond federal funding with the insecurity of all of it so that these outreach services will happen through the support of the community. So this one, our school-based health centers and Happy Smiles, are not, they are not self-sustaining. Federal funding sustains the primary health care centers.
Okay, I think if there's anything else, thank you so much. That was great.
Thank you for your time.
And Maslow.
Just getting really impressed by the time on this list. You guys are awesome. Presenters and commission alike. I'm Karen Phillips. I'm the development director with Maslow Project. And for anybody who needs a refresher, we provide wraparound support services to homeless youth and families throughout Jackson and Josephine County. The grant that we have applied for here, 100% of those served are Ashland residents. And it's important to note that not only do we work with youth and families who are homeless now, but there's a lot of national studies that have shown that the biggest predictor about whether you become a chronically homeless adult is whether or not you finish high school. And nationally, only 25% of homeless seniors graduate from high school. Last year, we graduated 80% of ours. So what you're doing with your support of this is helping us get upstream of the problem so that the kids that we're working with today don't end up being the adults of tomorrow who have lots of issues that have accumulated on top of their just being homeless as youth. So our wraparound support is everything from basic needs supplies to connecting people to transportation, other community services. The money coming from this grant will help support our advocate and our case manager here in Ashland. And as a question that we received, we have pretty much always made do with less than we've requested, as probably have most nonprofits. But what that does is it will affect the amount of service that we can provide here. And we have applied for both CDBG and this. They're both essential parts for funding for the program. I think in terms of duplication, which is one of the things that we talk about, Maslow Project is the only organization working specifically with a focus on homeless youth and families. We interact with virtually every human services organization in Southern Oregon. But ours is the focus on the youth specifically and their families. And really with that piece to make sure that they can stay in school, they can graduate from high school, they can either go on to post-secondary education or onto a career track. And so that's a pretty critically important role for establishing the generations of tomorrow, the kids that are going to be sitting around this table in another 10, 15, 20 years, hopefully part of this commission. So I think rather than go over what the grant is for, what I'd like to do is just open it up for any questions you might have.
Your in profit and loss statement last year says a pretty healthy net income, and I'm wondering if that money is reserved for a specific purpose, or
that is actually we try to keep about 10 to 12 months in reserves in case we lose a major portion of funding. It is all from individual donations that are accrued in years like when federal grant funds suddenly get slashed that we're depending on, or when a program in Jackson County that supported us for years finally says that they're switching their focus, that's something that we lean on to depend on. So that is an intentional, and it's a best practice of nonprofits.
Well, I don't see any other questions. I think because of CBG, we've got you guys down pretty well. Thank you. And thank you for coming and bringing us.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you so much for doing what you all do.
Thank you.
We're up to options. All right.
Options for helping residents of Ashland. If you'll take one of these and pass it down, I'll try to answer the two questions that you had. Thank you for those questions. Before I start, I want to introduce Michelle Arellano. She is our new executive director of OANA. This is her first week. It was one of our top priorities, so thank you, Michelle.
Yay!
On what I just passed you, I didn't take a copy, so.
Okay.
On what I just passed you, you asked a very good question about the demographics of who we serve vis-a-vis Ashland, Jackson County, and Medford. Our name is Options for Helping Residents of Ashland. So we have had a lot of discussion about this over the last 5 years. If you look at what I've just passed, on the left-hand side, you see the projects, the laundry shower trailer, the Ashland Community Resource Center, the Extreme Weather Warming Center, and the Ashland Winter Shelter. And on the top are the programs that we try to implement, housing, employment, and essential services. So you can see, for example, on the extreme left column, that number of unhoused families who found housing last year, 42 at ACRC and 14 with the winter shelter program. So a total of 56 families found housing that were previously unhoused. Now, to get specifically to your question, when it comes to the Ashland Winter Shelter program, we are obligated to serve anybody within Jackson County based on the funding we get from the state. I would say probably two-thirds or three-quarters of the people in the shelter were Ashland-centric, but certainly not all of them, and the number varied during the year. But when it comes to the Ashland Community Resource Center, the funding that we receive required, we have more funding that requires Ashland residency. So we ask every single intake we do, we ask, are you a resident of Ashland? If they say no, I'm in Medford, then we request that they go to Medford to get services. So of the 699 intakes that we did last year, 100% of them were Ashland residents. And the funds that we have requested for the next 2 years are specifically for ACRC. So your funds will be going to the residents of Ashland. This is the first chance we've really had to publicly describe what has happened to the Ashland Winter Shelter Program. La Clinica mentioned that we're working with them to try to do screening next year as part of the Winter Shelter Program. We just touched on that this year. But you can see of the 650 essential services that we did in the Ashland Winter Shelter Program, we not only had 14 people find housing, but we had 30 other people apply for low-income or subsidized housing. 45 people got the Oregon Health Plan, 55 secured food stamps, SNAP benefits, and you can see the rest of it. The shelter, it was a challenge, but it worked. And I think the community, which is really who operates this shelter, can take great pride in what they've done. Questions?
I just want to point out, I noticed you had all the partners and community on the back.
Yeah. We always put the tagline at the bottom, Jackie. These results should be credited to the collaborative. We just have amazing partners in this. I feel very much at home sitting around this table seeing St. Vincent de Paul and Southern Oregon Jobs with Justice and La Clinica and Maslow. And you guys run this center for us, so thank you.
So we also have been very familiar, so I guess we don't have any questions, but it's good work, and we see progress, and so that's terrific. Thank you.
Thanks.
What are we up to now? Peace House.
Staying here after 6 o'clock to listen to our stories. Most of you are probably familiar with us. We've been doing a hot meal program on Tuesdays since 1993. And I was involved in the inception, and then after leading Peace House for a while, I got pulled back in about 3 years ago. So I've seen the diner grow, and I've seen the amount of collaboration that has happened between us and various other entities. Of course, the Methodist Church has been extremely generous in terms of their hospitality, the use of their kitchen, which I think is the only regulation kitchen for serving the numbers that we do. We're serving anywhere from 90 to 150. The last 2 weeks we've done 130-plus meals each time. And it adds up to more than what I said. There is a 6,500, and I think we could easily, conservatively say that we're serving 8,000 meals per year. And that's 50 weeks. That's estimated at 50 weeks because of the two holidays that we haven't been able to do the service. So the other collaborators include ORA and the La Clinica, also OHSU, the Nurses Without Borders has been great. And the collaboration between all of those, plus, and ORA has a shower trailer outside. And so between all of us and some social workers that are volunteers that have come to help with referrals and handling different difficult cases where we know that there are people that are mentally ill and not on their meds, and they try to be there to be supportive of them so that they don't escalate those kind of situations. Between all of those collaborators and the church, we have a pretty interesting platform for getting people services so that it's not just the food. We find other things. The foot washing and the foot care program is one way to develop compassionate listening and to find ways to build trust so that maybe they will go over to La Clinica and get more health care if they need it, or that they will trust that there is another service that might be useful for them. And the hot meals themselves, we have about 35 volunteers who work with us, three different stages of preparation and serving and cleanup. And within that, some of those volunteers also do it in trade for food that they can take home with them. Most often have food left over that we send out the door with people, so that the 8,000 meals is actually a very conservative number. Part of our budget that I want to explain is that we do one fundraiser that we share money with. And we estimated that we would make a lot more money than we did on our empty bowls. So we made about half of what we estimate. If you're looking in there, you'll see that. But out of the 8,000 or so that we raised from empty bowls last year, we shared half of that with a combination of the Emergency Food Bank and Access and Food Angels. So that's figured into the cost of the meals, if you want to look at it that way. And of course, we have all the costs of insurance. We only are paying two staff. The rest are all volunteers. There's a small administration cost that's built in, but that's all. So each meal you can cost out. I heard you asking somebody costing out the meal. It's under $5 per person, and that's for all of that platform. It's not just for the meal. So I don't know if you have other questions or...
Right here. Go ahead.
So my question, so I noticed that you're paying a rent of, is it $750 a month?
Yes.
For the kitchen? Is there any possibility of working with the Methodist Church on lowering that rent as part of their commitment to the community?
I can tell you that they felt that way for 15 years, and now their building is hurting. Mm. And they need help in order for them to be the host of the service. They actually need to be supported in order to give us that rate. Because before we weren't being charged that. And so our goal is to pay them $9,000. Like $750 a month would be $9,000. We didn't pay them that much last year. We paid $7,500 last year. So, and they do an enormous amount. They pay for a security person to be there from 11 until 7. and they interface with us. They are handling calls in the church office. They're handling people that come looking for services that, because we are attracting people, mm-hmm. they have people there sometimes as early as 6 in the morning trying to get help. And they have their own issues trying to keep people from sleeping on the grounds and misusing the property. And there are a lot of things that they sort out for the program. So I at this point would not dare to ask the Methodist Church to give it to us. I just wouldn't. You know, they've been so kind. And it really, it's a wonderful kitchen to work in. We have, they've also provided one of the two industrial freezers that we have that cost them $3,000. Mm-hmm. So I think they're doing their part.
Thanks.
I guess that's any questions. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
RV Cog, Food and Friends.
Good evening, I'm Evelyn Kinsella. I'm the program manager for Certain Friends Senior Wheels and Wheels Program.
The wheels are moving.
Yeah. So thank you for allowing us to present this evening. I am going to just touch on various aspects of what we do beyond providing meals. So we're asking for $12,000 for each year. Provide meals on wheels. We're not asking for the meals at the senior center, but meals on wheels. Last year we did provide 16,000, over 16,000 meals to Ashland residents. So 9,000 of those meals went directly to the homes of seniors in Ashland. 62% were 80 and older. We had two that were 100. I want to touch on a NAPI score. That's a risk assessment score. Everybody who doesn't live in Ashland thinks that everybody that lives in Ashland has lots of money and they don't have any problems. It's not an issue.
No.
89% of the people who serve in Ashland have a moderate, very high NAPI score. That is based on their health, their living conditions, their income, the meds they take, and so on and so forth. So 89% is the highest we have in Jackson County. Behavioral health issues. I want to kind of talk a little bit about that. We're seeing an increase in behavioral health issues for seniors. The demographics are lowering. The younger senior, a lot more health issues, and a lot of those are behavioral health issues. We're very uniquely poised because we are able to coordinate as a conduit to RV Cog, SDS, other services. So when outreach goes out to assess a new client, they're not only assessing do they need the meals, they're also assessing do they need other help. And these help help lines, if you will, come through RV Cog SDS in the form of the program's options counseling, PEARLS, family caregiver support. We coordinate with Adult Protective Services, because there is a lot of elder abuse out there. We refer to just about everybody in the county that can provide a service to help our homebound seniors. The behavioral health issues are very costly. They're not only costly to other programs, but in terms of staff time. So that's why I'm asking for this money to provide the actual meal, because we have to divert a lot of funds into the staff time that it takes to keep people safe at home. So what do we provide? We provide a meal, which is part of the health. We're a donation-based program, and how that impacts housing is that because we are donation-based, it means that if people do not have the money to give something towards the cost of their meal, they're able to save what income they have and put it towards rent, meds, utilities, whatever else. There's not that burden to have to pay for food. So that's another thing that we do. We're a volunteer-driven program. 77 volunteers in Ashland provided 4,000 hours last year. If we continue, we are asking for this money. One of the questions you ask, what would happen if we weren't funded? Well, everybody has to look at wait lists. And one of the reasons several reasons why I don't want to do a wait list is not only are you going to impact across the board, it doesn't matter if they have a high or low score, they're just on a wait list. We don't want to do that. We want to serve the people who need. The second thing is because we are that key to getting information to the other programs, to auctions, pearls, if we're not serving a meal, nobody knows that these people that are at home need those services. So it's multifaceted, if you will. It's not just about nutrition. It's about the whole safety of that senior who is homebound. So in terms of questions about Medford, Jackson County, we've received $20,400 this year from Medford, $20,700 from the county, $12,000 from Eagle Point, $12,000 from Central Point, $10,000 from Jacksonville. We look at each community and say, this is your community. We need you to help within your community. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands this is all about Ashland. The money is all about Ashland.
I have a question, though. Let's see if others have one before. I know we funded the program with the fire department that was looking at home safety. Did they coordinate with y'all? Is that going
together? I believe they coordinated with Sharon Stewart Johnson, who made referrals to us as a result of it. So it was a sort of a multifaceted. Yeah.
But y'all connect in because it seems like you're both in the same houses sometimes.
Yeah, and we connect with the police department in Ashland. I mean, recently we had a chat behavioral health issues, suicidal. It turned out to be a great story because options counseling was in there. We couldn't find him. We didn't know where he was. We were able to connect with a caseworker. It turns out he was okay. But because everything was in-house in real time, that's where we were able to do the rest of the thing.
Just a comment, because I line dance and do yoga over there, and I sometimes eat a meal over there, too. When you serve meatloaf over there, the men come out.
Yeah.
So some of the senior ladies have said to me, how do I find the men? I said, look for meatloaf on the calendar.
The menu is changing for the younger demographic, the younger senior, but comfort food is still really important, especially to women. And one last demographic, 90% of our surveyed seniors said that they feel so much less isolated because they see that volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Rogue Valley Mentoring Circle, Rose Circle.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for being here and paying attention. My name is Sarah Kreisman. I'm the Executive Director of Rogue Valley Mentoring, formerly known as the Rose Circle Mentoring Network. Our mission is to transform communities through the mentoring of youth. And so in the vein of youth empowerment, where we put the primary focus, we also really hold the torch of intergenerational connections, building relationships, shouting from the rooftops the importance of giving attention to our youth and building that community, that network for them. So I brought some little goodies in case you're interested. Please feel free to share with your friends. So to give you an idea of what we're up to, Rogue Valley Mentoring trains. We have this amazing 10-hour training that we do so essentially what we do is we train and support adults to mentor youth in circle format, holding circle
Should
space,
ages 10
to 24, as well as one-to-one mentorships. And we train folks. We actually developed a new program, which is one of the reasons I'm asking for additional funding of in the pilot stages of a lead mentor support specialist position who actually sits in on the circles coaching our mentors. We found that even with our adults with quite impressive skills and resumes, that working with the high needs youth that are the majority, the lion's share of the population that we work with, can be quite challenging. So we have an amazing angel on our team who is a retired youth and family therapist who coaches our mentors, who are literally anyone off the street who has a background check. And go through our rigorous vetting process to support our youth in the best way possible, which for us basically is a caring, compassionate ear. We're not about teaching per se. We're not about helping with homework per se. We're more about showing youth that they're worthy of care, that we have adults that will, that adult will come to them on anywhere from 6 months to a year-long period and show them that they are the experts of their own experience, that they're worth their worth trust, they're worth compassion. And we have found, I've been learning so much about this in my tenure with the organization, that studies are showing that this kind of attention and support actually is trauma healing. So I see us as intervention. I see us as giving attention to youth who perhaps haven't made the kinds of decisions that will land them in juvenile detention situations yet, and it is definitely an effective method. So we have a presence, a strong presence in the community of Ashland. I would love to increase our presence in Ashland. We currently, 40% of our constituency is in Ashland. Most of our volunteers come in the Valley come from Ashland. And we are working with some interesting projects here. We have a community circle forming for the LGBTQ plus population. It will be likely a range of ages special interest circle. We are also supporting we're fiscally sponsoring a summer program for Ashland High School students on Lexi Delgado's property that will be teaching important life skills, personal enrichment and development. We're also working with the Ashland High School Inspire program, which work with special needs children that were, some of them are into their 20s, teaching them some important job skill training. So we have some youth who come into our office to mentor with our staff. I wonder how much more I should talk. I know that there's probably some
interesting
questions.
Let's see what the questions are. Here we go.
So I had a question. I was looking at materials and services. It says program and travel and advertising, $12,550. Can you just sort of tell me how that breaks out?
Yes. So the program budget is close to $9,000. And then the lion's share of the rest of that is advertising and marketing. And we're really working to boost our volunteer base. That's actually one of the primary challenges we have. We have wait lists of children, youth interested in receiving mentoring services, and we are doing everything we can to reach the community in turn and build the community around our mission and grow our volunteer base.
Thank you.
I guess we're there. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to take that as a good sign.
I think you can.
Very
yes.
Comprehensive. Thank you again for your
thanks
time.
Thanks very much. And Jobs with Justice.
So thank you. Actually, I want to start this off with just a quick story. Just this last week, we had a really amazing thing happen to one of the people we've been working closely with. She last summer was often getting in a lot of trouble with the police. She was drinking heavily and not on a very good path. And we worked very closely with her through the meal program and seeing her every day. Got her into a recovery program. She had her child was taken away from her, and this week she told me that her child's coming back to her. She's going into housing, and she's been doing phenomenal. She's going to get a job, too. She had a job interview working on that.
Did she find private housing or public housing?
That was public. It was through one of the programs.
Great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great story.
So we do food meals 5 days a week. We are supporting that, and
I'll just back up a little bit. Of course, our grant here is asking to support the Ashland Community Piecemeal, as Vanessa mentioned. We're supporting meals five days a week, and with of course the work of the Uncle Boots Diner and Comac ensures that there are one hot meal every day of the week, and on top of providing that basic food. We create environment, a community space where folks can gather, connect, and as well as we can, connect our volunteers to provide different wraparound services, connecting people with the different agencies. I feel that our program is really a force multiplier for all of a lot of the work that we're all doing in this room, and really complementing. We do provide meals to our community, and that includes who we identify as homeless travelers, but primarily the folks that identify as residents of Ashland, and say the majority of people we do see every day, and that also includes families, folks living in RVs, living in the community, elders. We've got one gentleman, a Korean War veteran, who comes in and not only gets a meal but also gets food for vegetables, whatever our abundance is for the day. And he takes that to his assisted living environment and is feeding people with that. We've got students from SOU that are taking advantage of that. We've got working poor, folks that are struggling with food insecurity, and folks who come in and volunteer, and as we see with the other programs, they come and volunteer because this is their opportunity to have access. So, with our program, we're asking to support, and the city has supported, has supported us. We really are really grateful for the support we've had in this space, with the Parks Department, and with area residents, with our restaurants, Food Angels, all the organizations we work with. The grant we're asking for today is to help to support the continuation of our meal program, and also to allow us to create less waste. 40,000 plus meals a year—that's a lot of paper plates, that's a lot of cups. And so we've been working with folks to bring in plasticware, and also working with area farms, folks that are collecting the waste for scraps, for compost that go to the pigs and the chickens. And we want to be able to expand that. We've been really good at doing that with Friday. We want to be able to expand that throughout the week. Since folks are maybe aware of the situation with Pioneer Hall and our organization having to, not having access to that space, that commercial kitchen space that we've been helping to facilitate. And so that is some of the grant we're asking is to help expand our, we have a warehouse space on Hersey Street. We need to get a commercial sink in there. We need to be able to expand to be able to facilitate food prep there and to bring in that and to be able to then, be able to have a zero waste, be able to provide zero waste events, being able to, instead of having paper plates, being able to bring the dishes back and wash them. The program is really important to the community. We're providing a space not just for people to eat and gather, but also as we have a culinary program that we've been working out at Pioneer Hall that allows us to train people, right, and want to be able to expand that.
One quick thing that we didn't put in the application I wanted to make sure got across is we do have students that come and they fulfill their community service hours. And also we have one that, just real quick, it was one of the young people that had hurt the temple recently, but with 10 and 12-year-old boys. And so one of those boys is doing his community service with us.
Question?
On the culinary program, I'm interested in that training program. With the addition of the appliances with this grant, would you be able to have your culinary program on your at your Hersey location?
That's our ultimate goal, yes.
Okay.
So I'm going to get in a question. It's a little different because I didn't see it exactly in your grant, but I mean, you guys have been newish and growing. Are you going to get to the place where we can have a community strategic plan about where you can go? I mean, it's so positive, but I just want to. I see a lot of ad hoc work that gets done, which is the most wonderful thing. But I wondered whether we could think about an adding a layer of bringing those community groups that you work with into a strategic plan, so we can kind of see where it goes. I don't know.
That is one of our goals. It probably, we
operate so much from day to day, just yes, to think of the emergency in front of us. But it is on our list of things that okay. we want to get to.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you'd find a lot of people that would help jump into that too.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
Thank you, and now
thank you.
Oh, thank you guys.
We're the last.
All right.
Praise Jesus.
I'm Paul Adalian. I'm the president of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul for Ashland and Talent. And I'm looking over to Bryce. She's our grant writer.
Yep.
And as I sat here listening to going through the list here, I'm thinking like, is there a way we could move up to alphabetical?
We might start next year in reverse.
We probably should.
Since I'm a librarian, I thought like DePaul, comma.
Right.
At least we get in the middle of the pile.
Yeah.
So I just start off with, you know, our grant. We're looking to help people stay in their housing and get into housing. And those are the two things that we do with your funds. And as you know, our ASSG, we call this a matching grant. For every dollar you give us, we put a dollar in. And that doubling up, and especially in Ashland, for rent and for deposits is huge. So a family of three, we can help them with $600. And so the matching part is really important to us. When we were doing the annual report this past year, what was really interesting, started really going through line by line looking at this, and with our community partners and us, we actually gave more than the matching, okay? So we spent $30,770 of ASSG funds, and St. Vincent de Paul and our partners put in $37,843. So a little over $7,000 more that we're putting back in. And so our community partners, Ashland Community Resource Center, Ashland First Congregational Church, First Baptist Church of Ashland, First Presbyterian Church of Ashland, Options for Southern Oregon, Rogue Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, Trinity Episcopal, and United Way. So those are our partners, and we work with them a lot. You already know that. Families that we serve this year with ASSG funds, we only serve people who are in Ashland. We have other sources that we use to help people in Talent so we can double up there like we do in Ashland. But that's a different revenue stream. ASSG does not go to Talent. People who reside in Ashland. We served 141 families with your funds last year, a total of 195 adults, children 132, lots of children. Total number of people served, 327. Families with children, 74. Of that, single parent families make up 49 of that. And so we help a lot of single families.
Mm-hmm.
Kept in housing, we kept 118 people in housing. Through the various crises they've encountered, we help, with them with their rent. Homeless house, 23. Okay, now those 23, last year we started a new program, and I think Vicki put it in the grant, about box kits. So we make these box kits for them, and so when they move into a house, they've got a coffee maker, they have dishes, they have utensils, they have various things, and every time we've given one of those to people moving in, just tears come to their eyes every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because it's a good way to start.
Yes,
and so, as you know, we're an all-volunteer organization, so every dollar you give, goes directly to help. And if we don't get the funding that we're requesting, it just means a little bit less that we can do with those numbers, like everybody else did here. And finally, I think one of the most important things is whenever we're working with somebody, we do home visits, we're in people's homes with them. When we start writing out a check saying we're going to go do this now, we always say we're writing out two checks. And we have a blue check that's St. Vincent de Paul, and we have pink checks that are City of Ashland. And we started that about 4 years ago to make sure if you ever wanted to audit us, you could see every cent we spent and not merge with ours or anything, totally separate. So we let them know we're writing two checks, one for the Society of St. Vincent de Paul and one for the City of Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
And they always have this look like,
right?
They don't get that. And so we always say the City of Ashland values people staying in their homes and getting homeless into permanent housing.
Right.
And so that really makes an impression.
Nice.
And I think they really feel like they're living in a pretty good place.
Yeah.
They're living in a pretty good place. So I think that's it. Do you have any questions for us? I wanted to do the least amount of time being the last.
I'll go ask the same question I asked, and that's about strategic planning, because it seems like you've had a growing program that works. Are we statious in that, or are we thinking down the way?
Well, I think
way to bring those people together about the future?
Right. I think that, you know, when we work with our partners,
right,
it's mostly funding and working together to solve a problem. I think strategically, we almost need to get everybody, most people who are in this room, there's a lot of different groups in this room that we do interact with, or we could interact with more, especially the Rise Over 65 program. It's like, okay, I didn't know about that program. That's something that we help seniors all the time. And it's like, okay, that's something that we could add to our resource list for seniors. And so I think getting people together in the same room, it would be like, we all know what we're doing. It's just, how can we work maybe more to get better together? None of us are in silos. We're all working together already.
Absolutely.
So we already have a foundation of, like, it's not like we're just like, don't bother us. We're just keep us away from us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're already working together, so it seemed like it wouldn't take much to get the group together to start looking at some more strategic planning.
Rich, I would say that session that you had about the strategic plan at the library,
yes,
I thought that was very helpful. And if we could do that sometimes where we're all together and talk about this in exactly this way, I think strategically the community would benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Good question.
One more.
Yeah.
Something you mentioned on the CDBG funds, your diocese is decreasing by $1,000 a month.
The council in Medford that dispenses to the 9 different divisions has, their revenue comes from their thrift store, uh-huh, and they've had a reduction in their revenue. And so they cut us by $1,000 a month, so $12,000 that we're not getting that we were getting last year. So that's put a lot of pressure on me as a volunteer grant writer to try to make up that revenue.
And so you mentioned that every dollar we give you is matched. Does that mean that reduces the ability to do that?
It doesn't because we prioritize, and we had a meeting in December, and we stopped funding certain things, and priority still is housing and utilities, and so we are still, the matching is the same way. And so the thing that's happening in Medford is there's a lot of other thrift stores going in Medford if you really take a look around, and Vincent has really been going down. It's leveled off this year, which is really good. We thought it could keep on going, but it stopped this year. Since our fiscal year started in October, we're even right now. So we're very grateful for that. And so we were told that we might get some money back from that, you know, being even this year rather than going down.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I guess we've come to the end. I just got to say, and I know I'm speaking for everyone, we should have filmed this. This is
right.
A seminar in
yeah.
community action
mm-hmm.
that everybody should
Next
see.
Time.
It's
yeah.
tremendous.
Next
if we could give everybody every dollar and more, we would. But
yeah.
we're going to take a break for a while, and then we will get back to y'all with what we've come up with in terms of what we've been allocating.
Thank you so much for
everybody. Yeah. See ya. I can't. See you tomorrow.
It was a bit of a marathon,
I'll say. This is my first time doing this one. I've done the trust funds and the CDBG, but I hadn't done this. I came after they had done the social service, and all I heard about was how crazy.
I guess it was crazy at several levels last time.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I came when you did.
Yeah.
So we've got a pizza coming up.
Thank
yeah,
goodness. I'm ready.
She's setting it up in the living room.
Oh, good.
And so
great food.
Is it our pleasure to kind of get something and come back and get started?
She's bringing it to us.
Oh,
she's
bringing it.
Oh.
We're going back there.
Yeah.
And we have 20 minutes.
Okay.
We're going to go back there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can come back there, too, if you want.
One of my friends.
So can we leave this room secure? Like
yeah,
leave our
I'll
purses
stay
and
here.
Stuff in here?
Oh. I'll stay.
Okay.
Ah.
okay.
I'm just going to shut this door because it will lock.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I can't leave the computers unattended with the door open, you know?
You never know.
I know. I got you a piece of pepperoni pizza while I was over there.
Thanks.
I realized I asked them what they wanted and I didn't ask you.
No, I'm not having money to give her.
No, it's totally fine. I just was, you know, trying to organize with them earlier today and then I realized, I don't have any. It's so funny, all our cups are like Starbucks cups.
I know, right?
Because we get them for free. We're terribly cheap.
Pepperoni pizza is really good.
Four or five toys is great. If you want to go get something to eat,
I'll
have
three. Okay, but thanks. Yeah, I just like to listen to the discussion.
Yeah.
That's the good part, right?
Yeah, well.
We just locked the door because of the computer, so.
Yes, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Thanks.
When did it start? Sorry.
About 5 minutes ago.
Okay. Thank you.